Good afternoon. It is Saturday, March the 23rd, 2019. And this is your friend Dan talking to you. If you've noticed in the last couple weeks, I haven't done as many podcasts. And I guess part of the reason is, and I mentioned this in the previous podcast, I've been a bit burnt out for lots of reasons. I've had some good news. Excuse me, I gotta drink some water. I had some really good news. I'll be starting a new job hopefully in about a week and a half, and hopefully sometime in April, my financial ship, which is currently listing, to use a nautical term, listing means that your boat is kind of tilting to the right or to the left, or rather, I guess you would say starboard and port or whatever. I don't know. I got that screwed up. But the point is, my financial listing ship may right itself sometime in April. And I will be able to not worry at least as much for a while about how I pay for food, housing, or shelter. That is really good news. The bad news, and this is bad news because I was kind of waiting on it. I was hoping for incompetence to save the day. But the thing is, incompetence, which can be trusted with respect to government, that's a true thing. You can trust in government incompetence or failure, but you can also trust that the government is a very, very hungry crocodile. The U.S. government is a very hungry crocodile, and it picks its teeth for its meal. So sometimes. So yeah. I was expecting to get a little bit of money back from the IRS. I was hoping that it would be enough for me to cover rent for a month or two. And I got one of those topic 203s. You know, I was checking online. It said, oh yeah, your refund has been approved. And then you read the topic 203 and it basically says, but, and here's the hairy but, probably the student loan company is taking its cut, and that's going to be everything, and you're screwed. So yeah, I was hoping that the crocodile, as I often refer to government, the crocodile would be incompetent and mostly full or too busy or confused. And no, it wasn't. The Eye of Sauron, or whatever you want to call it, that eye from the fucking Lord of the Rings turned on me, and yeah, and I even did the foolish thing of including my direct deposit information, because that's just the place I was in a month ago. And I'm saying this all as an anarchist, which you're, you know, it really is a question of why would you even go through that process at this point? You must realize, Dan, that you're just going to get fucked with no matter what happens at this point. You've voiced your opinions about the IRS and taxation, and yeah. It's all pretty ridiculous. It's all very lame, and I don't know what to tell you. I don't know which is lamer. The fact that, you know, this money keeps getting stolen from me, because that's how it feels. I feel like I put a lot of money into the system over the years, and when I believed in the system, I thought, well, at least I'm getting something back, right? Like national defense and Social Security eventually, and whatever. But the reality is, it's a big fucking scheme. Some people do get help. I will accept that theory. Some people get money, and they will continue to get money from the crocodile as long as they keep feeding the crocodile. Either, you know, financially or psychologically through voting, you know, making it feel better about itself. And then the other thing is this. I've been binge-watching the Dane Wigington, which I suppose is a bad idea. I've mentioned this in previous podcasts. I think he's a good guy. I think he is an interesting guy. And I think he has a good style on his podcast. So I've been listening to his YouTube channel, and he basically has his podcasts up there. And there's hundreds of them. Maybe not quite, but yeah, there are hundreds. And I've been listening to his reports, his weekly reports, and I'm almost through most of them, which is pretty sad when you consider, you know, when you think about it, because each one's about an hour long. So yeah, I've listened to a lot of them. I kind of fell asleep listening to some. So you put that together with this general picture, and I'm going to drink some more water. And what is basically a positive thing? Like, yeah, I've had some positive stuff. I got some help with rent from a person in my life, a friend, and I got some money from a listener about a week ago. That was pretty cool. It was a pretty big chunk of change. It helped me pay a little bit of the rent for March so that my friend didn't have to help me with all of it. That's good. And yeah, I've got this job coming up and it's probably going to happen. I got to be blunt. I feel like in a month or two I'll be reporting to you that there's something weird going on or something. I'm not saying that it's going to fail. It's more like, I don't know. If it turns out to be a really cool job, and it could, and it lasts a year or so, which is great these days, then that can be really great news. But honestly, I don't know. But yeah, this is good news right now. The not getting the money, excuse me, the not getting the money back from the IRS is not so good news. But I also have to admit, have I basically given the finger to all the banks and the student loan company? Yeah. I'll also admit that. So if you're one of these people who come back and say, well, Dan, you didn't pay your student loan, so therefore you deserve to be fucked. Well, I also think I went into massive debt to mostly be told lies. Basically. And there's actually more to it than that. A big bulk of the debt comes from when I was in graduate school. And frankly, if I'd been a year younger, the army would have paid for it, which is a whole nother depressing topic. Don't want to go into it. Because as an anarchist, revisiting issues of military commitment or service from 20 years ago, not a happy subject matter for me. Very confusing. Needless to say, I will agree with the general point. Expecting to get any money back was a really, it was a Hail Mary. I was not going to do it. Like, I was not going to do it. It's just I was in such a desperate place in February. In terms of figuring out how I was going to avoid going into the streets, I figured, dude, you might as well do it. I mean, if you're going to go to the fucking DSHS and end up, not getting help with any kind of rent, whatever, but getting a little food stamp card that will last 3 months, yeah, I got the food stamp card, which amounts to $192 a month, partial payment for February. So, assuming I were to fill out all the paperwork they want me to fill out, I would get it for maybe 6 months, but right now I'll probably get one more, tranche of it. So yeah, I took my 400 or 500 bucks back, I guess, from the feds, and they clearly took their pound of flesh too. And do I believe that any of their systems, their structures, will help me specifically in the future? Is it possible that I get a payout from the cash machine? It's always possible. The food stamp thing was getting some money back. But the net, from my perspective, has mostly been taxation, like me giving them money. And as far as Social Security goes, if they were to come out tomorrow and say, listen, we will do a buyout. We will give you 100 grand today if you relinquish all responsibility of the feds forever, giving you any money when you retire, I would take the 100 grand. That is a relatively simple wager from my perspective. Given life expectancies, given cancer in my own family, I would take the 100 grand. It's like, okay, Dan, here behind door number one, Dan, behind door number one is at the age of 67, soon to be probably 70, which means in another 20 or 30 years, right? Another 20 years, actually, almost here. Another 20 years, pretty much. You can get your retirement monies. That's door number one. Or door number two is, assuming you don't think there'll be anything there in 20 years, or that there's a good chance you and most of the people you know will be dead, you can take the 100 grand. I would take the fucking 100 grand, assuming that the student loan bullshit basically got forgiven, because I don't want to give them any bit of it. I don't. So let's call it 200 grand. Like they just come out and say, here's 200 grand, Dan. We'll either pay you the fucking Social Security, or you can take 200 grand. I'd take it. But that would probably bust the system. Most people would. And that would break the system. And when I say the system, I don't mean Social Security specifically, because they're still going to tax you up the butt. No, I mean the actual economic system. If people were given the choice between 200 grand in their pocket today or waiting till retirement, yeah, a few people who are already receiving money, they'd probably keep it. But a lot of people, both old enough for retirement and younger then, would probably take the 200 grand. And it would be interesting because it would show how much faith most people have, not simply in Social Security, because let's be honest about this. When we talk about Social Security or Medicare or any of these fucking programs, we're not really just talking about faith in these individual things. We're talking about faith in the system, in the government, to give you all the stuff you need. You see, I have faith that it's a crony racket. And I have faith that, like most crony rackets, it has to maintain a facade. So if I go to DSHS, I have faith that, yeah, there's a likelihood that even a white male, middle-aged, heterosexual dude will end up with one of those little food stamp cards because they have to maintain the facade. And I have no doubt that if I fit into a special protected class, I would get more assistance. That's also true. And I don't want to go into the specifics of that because that's a whole nother discussion, what it means to be special in America today. But do I believe that beyond the facade, beyond the gimmicks, beyond the racket, do I believe that this is a stable thing that's going to be around forever? Well, what I know from history is all governments fail and all empires fail. It is invariably true. It's funny, that was going to be like the main topic of this podcast, but yeah, so the bad news about me not getting the money, that's fine, but it's not like I think the system works. And what's really funny is that when I found out the other day, when I researched topic 203, I got a little depressed for a couple hours, and then I actually came around and realized, why are you upset? Wouldn't you kind of be more or less a little upset if you did get the money? Because in a way, it's like you don't really expect the system to ever work, but more importantly, I rarely expect it to work in my favor. So yeah, these things, they exist as a kind of casino gimmick as long as they do. They succeed as long as they do, as long as they can be funded. And if you live in a system of rackets like we do, a system of rackets and very deep propaganda, and let me explain what I mean by deep propaganda. I don't mean just newspapers or the stuff you would have seen in the Soviet Union, with like Pravda or Izvestia. I don't mean that. That's shallow propaganda because they basically can kill you or throw you in an insane asylum. They have all kinds of ways of dealing with you, so they don't really have to be that sophisticated when it comes to their propaganda. They just have to be minimally sophisticated. But in our own country, and I think Noam Chomsky has done a great job of identifying this in Manufacturing Consent, but in our own country, especially in the last 100 years, the architects of information have mastered deep propaganda. And deep propaganda is where it's not just the newspaper, it's not just the news show or the journalists on TV, it's not just the radio guy, it's the movies, it's the books, it's the history professors, it's the people that tell you how to think about the world before you even think about it. It's every fucking public school teacher and all their curriculum. Deep propaganda is immersive. And therefore, it can be very subtle, which means it doesn't have to deliver everything at once. You could think of deep propaganda as the kind of radiation they sometimes give cancer patients who have brain tumors. They'll use targeted intersectional radiation so that each individual beam of radiation is much less dangerous. So the surrounding tissue is not harmed, but the intersection point of two or three or four of these beams will produce the result of killing the tumor. Well, with respect to deep propaganda, the same thing is basically true. It's not one thing that changes people's behaviors. It's the variety. And does it have a kind of half-life? Does it wear off? Well, I think it does. I don't think it's perfect. Nothing that human beings create is perfect. But it's very sophisticated. Anyways, I don't really believe the system works So I don't really expect it to pay off. It is a bunch of racket surrounded in a sugary coating of very deep propaganda. And if you see it that way, all you can really say is the following. It is a horrible machine. It can be gamed. Let's be blunt. The government can be gamed, you know, gamed as in gaming the system. The government can be gamed. There are lots of, especially, I mean, the no-brainer is the military-industrial complex. But it's not just crony business people at Raytheon and General Dynamics. It's Cerner. It's all the healthcare companies. It's United Health. It's United Health Group. It's all of these, you know, companies that work in the shale patch who are getting ultra low, very low interest rate loans because of economic policy that does get set at a very high level. Maybe not perhaps the Oval Office, but let's be blunt. There's a few people that set these policies, and we're not a member of that club. So, yeah, I don't know. The other thing is this. Some of my recent podcasts, and I had a specific one about this. I had a specific podcast that dealt with this subject. But in a recent podcast, I dealt with the subject of the quote-unquote plague of madness. Now, this particular podcast could be a little bit stream of consciousness. You've seen that from me before, so let's just assume that's the case here. But I've been talking about the plague of madness, and this again in reference to how empires fail. And empires do. They invariably fail. Governments fail. Everything human beings build will crumble. I'm sorry, whether it's technology or government. But with respect to the ways in which governments, and let's think bigger, let's think in terms of society or an empire, but in the terms of our American society, and maybe even the modern world society, one of the ways in which it can fail is through basically mental breakdown, but on a massive scale. I've believed this for years. You know, I've believed for years that a kind of progressive building, almost impossible to decipher or understand at first, plague of madness that starts out relatively small, but one thing leads to the other. And the thing is, in this particular plague, this plague of madness, you can have people in sensitive positions who are simply under stress. So when I say plague of madness, it's a spectrum. I mean, what is crazy? Is crazy somebody that goes around, you know, yelling nutty stuff while naked on the corner of the street someplace? Yeah, that's one kind of crazy. Another kind of crazy is someone's just really depressed and they're sitting in a meeting and they're supposed to provide an opinion on whether or not a specific chunk of software or a specific patch to a system or a specific architecture, whatever it may be. An engineer is in this meeting and they're just a little bit depressed. That's where they're at. And they are the person that should have spoken up. But instead, you get a bunch of airplanes failing, you know, 6, 9 months, a year or so later. So the plague of madness is not just about people going nuts and driving their cars in the crowds or using machine guns on people. That's pretty overt type A plague of madness. It's not just, you know, overt and obvious murder and rape and destruction, but it can be more subtle. It can simply be people not doing their jobs. So whether it's this case of this Boeing, I think it's the, I want to say it's the 737 MAX. I want to double check that. But I think it's the Boeing 737 MAX that has been basically grounded. I was going to check this online. I don't want to get this wrong. Ugh, the news is so ridiculous these days. I go to two aggregators. I go to Zero Hedge and I go to Drudge Report. They both have, okay, there we go. So the Boeing 737 MAX, and no one's come out and said yet what the problem was, although some people suspect it may be a complex problem, which usually is the case, that it's not just one thing, but a few things that are wrong. But there's a chance that it could involve software, and I got to tell you that my experiences with the software industry in recent years has been a study in this kind of emerging madness. So I think it's totally plausible that one of the things that went wrong could be an issue of software. That does not seem implausible to me. And the thing is, if people are going crazy, if people are starting to lose it, even if it's just, you know, workplace depression or incompetence or making mistakes in their job, that can be pretty bad. It's like this Houston fire, this plant fire in Houston. I don't know if you've seen it in the news, a big chemical plant fire, releasing lots of really nice things like benzene, you know, which you don't need any of. You don't need any benzene. There's no FDA recommended daily allotment of benzene. But anyways, amongst other things, benzene and other chemicals and gases, and God knows what, because frankly, how do we know what is in the cloud of black smoke floating over Houston, Texas? But yeah, it's entirely plausible that this failure and other plant failures like this in recent years have been due mostly to human incompetence in one way or another. You know, it's also possible that simply the strain on the system, you know, people trying to get too much out of too little, people cutting corners. But in a way, that's also kind of crazy. I mean, making those types of decisions where you say, well, someone recommended we have three release valves or relief valves or safety valves. And this economist comes along and this accounting guy from a consulting firm, and they say, we don't need three of these relief valves, you can get away with one, and we can get this to you really cheap from China, and you know, blah blah blah, and we'll do just in time, so you'll have one valve on stock, on standby, but you just order as you need it, binning, blah blah blah, blah blah blah, fancy words, blah blah blah, Six Sigma, black belt, blah blah blah. And so this guy running this plant gets this recommendation to go from one safety level to another. And instead of going to engineers, who, if there were old timers there, would probably say, you know, dude, there's a reason why those other two exist. They go to the consulting company and they make their money off the percentage. So they're saying to themselves, we're going to make money if we save them money. This is not a long-term proposal from our perspective. And here's the thing, guys, I just painted a picture. I'm not saying that is what happened in Houston. But if you want to talk about the plague of madness, it's not all sort of scary rated R movie stuff. It is just, on the very lowest level, it's people in the wrong job making the wrong decision on the wrong day. It can be that simple. It can be literally a series of mistakes that pile up over time because people and systems are under stress. The complexity of our civilization is increasing, but the amount of resources required is not increasing at the same rate. So we have this complexity that is increasing at this really nonlinear rate. But the resources required to support the complexity, to make sure it doesn't go to the natural state, which is entropy, you know, of things falling apart, those resource requirements are going up too, but they aren't there. So people and organizations are under a lot of stress out there. And if they happen to have roles like jobs that involve things like chemical plants or nuclear power plants or like the Hanford Reservation, if your job at the Hanford Reservation is to make sure that the highly radioactive nuclear waste in the storage containers aren't leaking into the Columbia River Basin, well, gee, I hope that you're not going through a divorce. And I hope you are getting paid enough to pay your bills. That's the truth. If your job is to make sure that that chemical plant in the major city is safe and isn't releasing poisonous gases to the community around or poisoning the water, I kind of hope that you don't have a, you know, heroin addiction. I kind of hope that you are in a good place with alcohol. That's just how I feel, but how I feel is fucking irrelevant. So yeah, there's been stuff in the news, and I would even include the New Zealand thing. And I like I said, I've been burnt out. So this news has really been burning me out. It's you know, if you listen to my podcast, you know that I'm not generally speaking Pollyanna. So you're not going to, you know, listen to one of my podcasts and hear anything that would remotely resemble Pollyanna. You know that. But even I have points in time where I say, no mas. You know, I look to the Lord in heaven and I say, Lord, you know, I've had enough storms. And yes, I agree, Lord in heaven, maybe half of these storms are my own construction, but the other half are coming from the planet. And I can do that. I can say, I ask for peace. Can we have some peace? And so that's been part of it. But yeah, this news about New Zealand and how rapidly the events are unfolding. It's like we go from really scary event to almost immediately, well, we got to collect all the guns in New Zealand and we're just going to go do it. And because we know that if the guns didn't, if there were no guns in New Zealand, the crazy dude who was checked out and given the legal fucking right to go use a weapon, if we don't do this, more crazy people like this particular guy, I think his name's Tarrant, but I just don't give a fuck. Yeah, we got to collect all the guns so people don't get shot by guns. And listen, I get the logic of it. Automobiles kill people. So the logic could be, why don't we change the way we drive? Listen, I'm not going to get all crazy, but I'm going to make an argument. If you look at the statistics in the United States of America on automobile deaths, you can make a very strong argument that people should not be driving cars around. It isn't to say that I want a law against it. I'm an anarchist. I think that's crazy. Frankly, if you took the government out of it completely, probably, most likely, the outcome would be safer streets. But that's, you know, just because I think people are more rational when they're left to cooperate, you know, versus being ordered around as slaves. But we're about to find out. I mean, we're a society of slaves. So if you think the slave mentality is sustainable, if you think the worship government thing is a long-term strategy rather than a short-term gimmick, I understand. But guess what? This whole debate between one side, which isn't just anarchists, but I would say libertarians, anarchists, people who believe that the best society, the strongest society, is a free society, also the most resilient, the most flexible. That's one side of the debate. And the other side is the hyper-centralized, controlled reality that is poisonous and toxic of deep propaganda and gimmicks and rackets. And we're about to find out who wins that one. And truthfully, I think that's the case. It's why things are getting sketchy out there. So yes, there is a plague of madness out there. And I'll also add this, it isn't just about individuals. Like when you look at New Zealand, let's say for the sake of argument that it was a thing that was set up, that it was basically a false flag. I'm not going to say that. I'm saying, for the sake of argument, say it was a false flag. Listen, governments are getting crazy too. This plague of madness just doesn't apply to one segment of the population. It applies to the whole population. And since the government is still made up of people, it applies to them as well. So when you talk about this whole issue of, you know, what's up with New Zealand, it could very well be a proof of the whole everyone's going crazy thesis, which is basically, my, you know, my fundamental thesis is people are going to start going nuts before, ultimately, before things get really bad in other ways. Like, I don't think people are remotely mentally prepared for what's going on or what's going to happen, in part because they've been so lied to, in part because of the deep propaganda. I mean, the American people especially have been fed a version of the world since birth that is completely false. It's not just a little false, you know, or let me put it this way, it is a big lie that contains enough truth to seem true. But I would say the truth content of the American paradigm is roughly equivalent to the orange content of orange juice in New York public schools in the 1980s. You know, or, I'm joking. I remember seeing the 60 Minutes on this or something. I think it was New York or another school district. They were serving orange juice in their cafeteria. And the scientists on the 60 Minutes episode said, you know, there was one thing we did not, we found all these bad things in the orange juice. And they went through a list and it was pretty terrible. But they said there's one thing we really didn't find in the orange juice at all. And that was any orange juice, like actually any evidence that there was oranges in it. Yeah. Sorry for that tangent. So yeah, a plague of madness will manifest itself in different ways. And so with respect to, the big paradigm contains mostly lies, or I should say falsehoods. The big lie of America is mostly falsehoods, but it does contain little pieces of truth, And it's one of these things they're very good at. They're very good at managing this over time. It's like that concept of the Overton window, where you kind of slowly shift the paradigm over time so that people don't even notice that was what we once called conservative today is really almost liberal. And what we once called liberal today is pretty much a communist. And that these terms, these concepts, the way we see the world is being shifted subtly over time. When people who have been imbued with that kind of toxic paradigm begin to really confront on a massive basis the reality in front of them, yeah, you're going to have a lot of people going crazy. And listen, my hat goes off to the deep state and the ubiquitous computing and all the apps and tablets they've thrown in people's faces. I mean, I clearly think that was a genius move on their part. It is true that people are staring at their smartphones and their tablets and their computers, and they're not really looking at the world around them. That is true, okay? But at some point, even that's going to fail. Here's the thing. Those systems that enable the quote-unquote ubiquitous computing and the Internet of Everything, the Internet of Things, that technology. You may find this hard to believe, but it's very sensitive on a sort of macroeconomic scale. Whether it's the production of chips, or whether it's final manufacture of devices, or whether it's just the maintenance of networks and software, all these things are still very much human dependent. Yeah, AI is coming along. Yeah, computers are getting smarter. But even that requires a person, okay? Some human being is involved. So these technologies, these systems, they will start failing. And so the very means by which the big lie is maintained starts breaking down. And I don't know. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what more to say about that. I use this terminology, and I don't know if I've mentioned this already. I'm gonna mention it again. So I don't think I've mentioned this, but on Thursday I did my first sort of one-on-one interview with another podcaster. I'm going to include his links in this podcast in the information section for the SoundCloud, but he has excuse me. He has a blog slash website slash sort of message board place. And it's at www.doomsteaddiner.net. That's spelled DOOMSTEADDINER.net. That's doomsteaddiner.net. His name is Ralph Emerson. He also has a YouTube channel, The Doomstead Diner. And so we did a one-on-one, and he covers topics, subject matter that deals with the issue of the breakdown, the collapse of human society and civilization. And it's possible that his perspective is radically different from mine, and really from talking to a person for a couple hours, what do you really know? But he seems like a pretty cool dude, a smart guy, and I'm going to start listening to more of his podcast, but I would recommend him. And it was a really good conversation. And one of the things I mentioned is that I really felt like the American economy at this point was the best analogy or the best way to describe it was like a scavenger economy, but it was more cannibalistic. Like essentially, everyone is beginning to see each other as some object, some resource from which to extract money. It really has become almost that bad. I'm not saying that everyone's knocking on each other's door trying to sell Amway. But again, so much of this racketeering in America is just a bit more subtle than that. It really is. It's subtle and it's masked in a lot of opaque terminology. Yeah, a lot of it, a lot of the ripoff scams happen on Wall Street, but they're not all on Wall Street. A lot of them happen on Main Street. A lot of them happen essentially at the point of sale. But the bottom line is, it seemed to me that we've entered a scavenger economy, an economy of where we're scavenging, but we're not just scavenging resources that we have to sort of make it another day. We're sort of treating each other as objects to scavenge as well, to extract resources from. So maybe you could call it the economy of cannibalism and scavenging, but that's essentially where we're at. It's sort of like in those cartoons, like the old-timey cartoon, where you've got these two cartoon characters, you know, sitting in some cabin in the Yukon during the gold rush, and they don't have any food. And so one of the characters looks at the other character, and instead of seeing a human being, another cartoon character, they basically see like a ham hock or a big cheeseburger or some other kind of food. And so it's essentially, it's almost like to me, part of the, and maybe this is part of the plague of madness as well, but it seems to me that one of these things that's happening is people are beginning to see each other not as people, but as some resource to be taken advantage of. And this isn't just strangers. This is friends. This is family. This is everybody. And I don't totally blame people in the sense that, you know, if you got to survive, you got to survive. And sometimes it's real subtle. Like sometimes it might even be benevolent and benign. Like, for example, I've received some help in the last few months from people in my life, from strangers I've never met. I've received some financial help. But I don't know that any of these people, I know that some of these people are definitely not rich, and I don't know that all these people have extra money. And believe me, when it comes to donations, I make this point explicitly. You know, yeah, I can use financial help. That is a true statement. It is also true that if you have other people in your life or yourself that needs the money, you should, you know, hold on to it. If you happen to be really rich and want to like send me some money, guess what? Because of the IRS screwing me, I'll take it. Believe me, I'll take it. Because, you know, I don't think I'll get my first check for the new job until way into April. And it could be well past the point of that letter you get at the middle of the month. So yeah, but still, even if it's benign, even if it's benevolent, even if it's voluntary, I still feel like I'm feeding off the blood of other people, and that's the deal. And then when you talk about the stuff that's not so benign, the stuff that might be malignant, you know, malevolent, you know, basically have a darker agenda to it. For example, you know, all you Zero Hedge guys out there, we all see these links, these funny links to like how you can make $1 billion from home in a day. And believe me, I did. I clicked on one. I even recorded the conversation on the phone with the person I talked to. But here's the deal. That is very explicitly people strip mining each other, if you want my opinion. I have a person in my life, okay? I'm not going to give specifics, but it's a person in my family that, you know, looked into a job situation recently, and it looked really sketchy. It was a job situation on Craigslist on Craigslist. It was a job situation, a help needed on Craigslist. And it was just implausible. The meeting location was like in an airport, and it was like, you know, there was no interview. It was just to be hired and do the paperwork. It was really scary. So there are a lot of things going on now, a lot of rackets that are being directed essentially from one, you know, person to another. It's like lateral. I mean, a lot of the racketeering in the past, it tended to be very, you know, top down. And it still goes on, believe me. I mean, I think the government is a racket, but essentially most of our economy is now just a multi-layered racket scheme. But it's also sort of, you know, lateral now. It's not just, you know, coming from the vertical, but it's also sort of horizontal. I think people are racketeering against each other in onesies and twosies and groups. And like I said, if it's families trying to get by, it's like the home flipping thing. I have a very strong opinion about treating food, water, or shelter as something that you should financially game. It's just my opinion. I think you need food, you need water, you need shelter. And although I'm not a communist, I think if you produce food, water, or shelter, you should probably do so in a free market and not take advantage of any financial schemes. So if all of a sudden the banking system got into the food world, and in a way, frankly, with agricultural supports, we've already done this, but if all of a sudden the banks got into the food world and started leveraging up food, that would help nobody. That would starve people. We would all be dead. If we treated food or water the way that we've treated housing, you know, so yeah, we'd all be dead. But like I said, I beat people up, but I try to step back from that. And when it comes to families, like I have family members with kids. They have to make the best decisions they can make. And if they have to take advantage of the racket to be able to pay for something they need for their kids, I really can't judge them. You know, I can't judge them. When I first recognized a lot of my core beliefs around anarchism a few years ago, I was kind of in a very judgmental state at times, but I really can't judge people because we are in a kind of trap. If you want to be a completely separate person living your own free life, I think that's kind of possible, but it's becoming very difficult and in many ways very expensive. And I just don't mean in terms of money. Okay? Money's just part of it. If you really want to sort of disappear into the background, you have to give up on a lot of things at this point in human history. You got to give up on Facebook and Twitter. You got to give up on being connected to any standard sort of models of social media. You pretty much have to give up on any normal internet connection. You're going to have a driftable, movable VPN connection, and it better be a good VPN connection. And that's just the beginning of it. Truthfully, you shouldn't have a computer at all. If you really wanted to drop off the radar and be your own person, you kind of have to disconnect from pretty much everything, including those things in society and civilization that make life easier. That is not just a question of money. That's a question of, you know, social wealth, you know, social capital. You have to give up on having a connection to a lot of people in your life, and that's the thing. So, yeah, I try not to judge too harshly. I'm working on it. I think I've sounded a bit strident and crazy in recent podcasts about the Seattle housing market, but it's just because, you know, frankly, when you're staring down homelessness, and I'm still not out of the woods yet, I think that issue becomes kind of specific. You know, it's sort of like you're staring the problem in your face. Anyways. So yeah, we live in a kind of cannibalistic scavenger economy. And I don't know what you'd say about that, but like the plague of madness, it's another way in which these things can fail. And if I were to look at the racket, like let's do a racket update. And if I were to look at the racket and say to myself, what is more likely in the near future? And there are lots of possibilities, but let's say there's three basic core possibilities. One is status quo continues, which means that we keep going through these cycles of miniature crashes and quantitative easing, and we do this economically at least until I'm dead. And maybe it is a very painful, grinding process, and maybe it's quite horrible, and maybe it's like a slow motion scream. But yeah, it lasts 20 or 30 years, and I'll be dead before it's over. That's one possibility, which means more of this dark, gray, disgusting racket economy forever, at least as far as I'm concerned, until I die. That's option A. Option B is, listen, the system's almost there. We don't know because we're little people. We're not in the racket, so we're not in the know. But I gotta say, in terms of my spidey sense, it's been going off in a lot the last year. But also, I've had a lot of, you know, personal financial tragedy the last year. So you got to be careful about how much you write into something like that, you know. But intuitively, looking at the world right now, it does seem like things are starting to become unglued in ways that the system cannot keep them glued. So it's getting unglued out there. That would be number two possibility. Number three is they know that number two is happening. They know that, you know, the first possibility you know, the same status quo, but a little worse incrementally over time forever is not likely. They know the second thing is probably happening, so they go for the third option, and that is a complete reset. And I don't mean reset in terms of the financial system. Listen, guys. When they think reset at this point, they're thinking in terms of the human race, okay? They're thinking of how many people they want left alive after the reset. And if and looking at the situation, like, for example, Donald Trump saying that Israel should keep the Golan Heights, you may think that's a small thing, but if you voted for Trump in 2016 thinking that he was going to be the anti-neocon, well, I hate to break it to you, but saying that the Israelis have a right to the Golan Heights forever at this point, that's a very neocon position. That and recognizing Jerusalem the way that Donald Trump did, these are very neocon positions. And so while on a certain level you can say, well, it seems like Donald Trump is battling the deep state, frankly, when it comes to the war machine, it's really the same as it ever was. And with respect to Venezuela, man, it just looks like the crocodile simply has turned its gaze south. But it's also still an issue with Iran and North Korea. I just think that the third option is that they trigger a major war. And I gotta say, perhaps the cleanest way for them to wipe the slate, I say cleanest, I don't mean clean. I don't mean anything done at that level is clean, but perhaps the cleanest strategy to get the biggest bang for their buck of wiping the slate clean, perhaps the best strategy is something like a nuclear war. And so, yeah, there are other possibilities, but right now it seems to me that in the next year or two, we're either going to get to the point where the collapse of the American economy and the American society is going to become impossible to hide. And so at that point, it's a question of whether the powers that be want to allow that or whether they just decide to pull the plug. And here's the deal. All of our quote-unquote competitors or our strategic adversaries like China and Russia, they have similar problems. This is not special. We're not special. China has its own economic problems. So it's more or less a question of, do you think the people in power, do you believe the people that run the world give a shit about you? And this goes back almost to the beginning of this podcast. Do you believe the bullshit? Do you believe the deep propaganda? Do you believe what they tell you? Do you believe that there'll be Social Security in 20 years? Like, if I came up to you and said, okay, door number one, you can have $200,000 and no Social Security at retirement. Door number two, you get your Social Security and you don't get any money. I think most people, probably 70% at least, would pick door number one. And that's why they don't offer it, oh, by the way. They don't offer it because they know almost any amount of money above some threshold, like let's say above 50 grand, almost any amount of money would appeal to a lot of people at this point, given their situation. If you believe that the government will provide you your Social Security, then we're going to be fine, okay? There's going to be no nuclear war. All of our officers and leaders will behave with honor. The collapse, which is going to come, will be managed in a graceful way. Fed Chairman Powell will, you know, come into his own and will be the man of the time, and like Bernanke, blah, 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 blah. You can believe that the people in charge will save you. If you want to, or you can ask yourself, is it more likely that they want to save themselves? That's the other thing, too. Because one of the consequences or side effects of fixing a problem is finding out why it happened. I mean, it is. Whether you like it or not, whether it's the beginning or the end, eventually when you fix an issue, you also figure out the cause of the issue. And in the case of the financialization of all human life, well, there's a finite number of people at the top of that pyramid. And those are not people, I think, who want to spend any time in jail. Or even less bad, lose all their money, I suppose, less bad, lose all their money and spend months and months and months in front of the Senate or the Congress in some sort of almost unending apology tour. And then at the end of the day, they end up broke and bankrupt. These are not people that would be happy with that. I'm not trying to be a dick, but they wouldn't. They would be much more happy. They would be happier in a bunker 2,000 or 3,000 meters below the surface of the earth while everyone else is being vaporized, or at least a percentage of everyone else. And if we're talking about latest generation nukes, which would be neutron bombs, and I gotta say, the whole Trump announcement about these tiny nukes going on missiles, it kind of made me think about the neutron bomb thing. I gotta be honest with you. It's like, holy shit, are they just gonna come out and say everything's late generation neutron bombs now? But yeah, if you do your little nuclear war mostly with neutron bombs on all sides, then yeah. A lot of the buildings, a lot of the structures, a lot of stuff is still there. It's just a lot of dead people. And all you have to do is just rank order the zip codes, take the zip code, take zip codes by population, rank order, take the top 500 or 200 zip codes, whatever they are. Maybe it's just 100. Whatever represents 60% of the human population, and then you just neutron bomb the fuck out of those 100 or 200 zip codes or addresses or cities. And since we cluster in cities, it's really not a hard problem. It's just basically gridding out population density, the neutron bombs, their circular error or circular likelihood of damage, all the stuff you can do if you're in the Air Force and you work in effects and you do that kind of study, blah, blah, blah. So given my attitude, do I think it's which is more likely, that Trump is this chosen man who is driven by Jesus Christ and is here to save us and will manage us through some sort of a neocon deep state collapse towards some positive, happy future? And like Dagny Taggart, he'll rise out of the Oval Office bunker and draw the shape of a dollar sign in the sky? No, I don't believe that. I think Trump, best case scenario, he's just like every other slob that's been in the office my whole life. And that means he basically takes orders. He is the representative to the crocodile. He is not the crocodile. And I gotta tell you, the swamp and the crocodile was there long before Trump ever existed. There has been a swamp and a crocodile in human society for thousands of years. And it's one of the great struggles, especially for anarchists, to figure out how we escape it. We all have strategies, but really, it is a pressing question because that's an eternal cycle of pain, the crocodile. It never ends well. It's never a good thing. But yeah, I think that Trump is the representative to the crocodile. And I think if the crocodile, as a structure, has a choice between losing weight and admitting it's been stealing food, or basically tipping over the table and eating all the babies and even the radioactive ones, yeah, I think he's going to choose option B. So yeah, I don't know. And like I said, not getting the IRS check may have put me into a bad state of mind. But it's not like I have a positive attitude about the government as it is. And that's the thing about collapse. And you know, Ralph Emerson the other day and I were talking about this, and while it can appear on the way up that things are smooth as a civilization grows in its wealth and its scope, the other side, the collapse side, is very jagged, because even though the loss of something can be smooth, you hit these little bumps along the way. And perhaps it's true on both sides. I mean, there are these sort of non-linear events that happen that create spikes in growth as well. But the point is, it's a very jagged mountain on both sides. It's jagged on the way up, and it's jagged, and it's very, very jagged on the way down. And these jagged events, they can be anything. They can be, like I said, as subtle as the wrong person on the wrong day making the wrong decision while working for Boeing. It can be that simple, and all of a sudden, hundreds of people are dead. It can be some plant manager who's going through a divorce and forgets to do something that person was supposed to do to make sure it was supposed to happen. Maybe it was an inspection. Maybe it was a cleanup. Maybe it was a repair job. But that particular industrial engineer on that day did the wrong thing, and now all of a sudden you got a black cloud over Houston. Now, do I know that that's what happened? No, I don't. But I do know that these sort of random catastrophic events are becoming a lot less random. There's been a lot more of these huge forest fires that we can't control and chemical plants exploding everywhere, not just in America. There have been more of these events. And here's the other thing, too. I think they cover up a lot of this. So we see the tip of the iceberg. We see the stuff they can't cover up, okay? It's hard to cover up a giant cloud of black smoke. But there are lots of other mistakes, lots of other manifestations of the plague of madness that they can do a reasonably good job of covering up. So yeah, whether it's at the small scale or the large scale, you know, it's one of those things we have to contend with, that during a collapse scenario, people, not all people, but a lot of people, especially in power, I think, or at least in key positions under stress, are going to be going insane. I mean, there's no other way to put it. The mere fact that their paradigm ceases to match reality puts them into a state of madness, you know, whether they know it or not. In fact, that's part of the crazy today, the zombie insanity, is people's paradigms, the way they see the world is so skewed, so screwed up, so bent, so Salvador Dali, that they are, for all intents and purposes, crazy, because they do not interact with reality in a healthy, normal way. Or I should say, they're currently interacting with the reality in a semi-functional way, but it is not going to be the case tomorrow. And when that happens, ugh. Anywho, I did a podcast, so everyone should be happy. And thanks again to Ralph Emerson, like I said, reaching out to me doing the one-on-one. Thanks again to the anonymous, not-to-be-mentioned listener from a week ago. I really appreciate that money. It helped a lot. It was about a week ago. Little more than a week ago, actually. Thanks to everyone else who listens and donates and helps in their own way. I appreciate having listeners. And if you want to go to my Patreon link, it's on my start page on SoundCloud. You can become a donor if you want to, but that's up to you. Like I said, I don't want to steal food from your bowl, so to speak. And have a great Saturday.